Well done to David for his leading us in these thought-provoking hymns of praise, and to Daniel for his reading of the scripture, and to Kevin especially for his earnest petition. Have you ever disappointed the Lord? Have you ever felt that you might just have deeply disappointed Him in what you have done or failed to do? The 14th chapter of the Gospel of John is a part of a conversation that Jesus had with the disciples immediately before His death the next day. He knew the sense of loss they would feel, because He said to them, "I am going away, and where I am going, you cannot come now." It disturbed them. And there are four questions that are raised in the middle of the discussion. He says to them, "I'm leaving, but the reason I'm leaving is for your sake." But when He said that, having said He's going away, having said more than that, in the end of verse 4, in the 14th chapter of the Gospel of John, that you know the way, it was too much for Thomas, who is often candid, unashamedly candid. He could not let this pass. It was too critical that they know exactly what course Jesus was taking, and He just said, "We don't know where you are going. How could we know the way? We don't know the way." And Jesus responds, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father but by me." Then He adds, and there is a gentle rebuke in this, "If you had known me, you would have known my Father also." And that's addressed to all of the disciples. And then He adds, "From this time, you know Him and have seen Him." Now, it's curious that He said to Thomas, in direct contradiction, apparently, "You do know Him, and you have seen Him, and the implication is you know the way." And Thomas has just said, "We don't know the way." I think what Jesus is saying is, you have it in your grasp to know and to see. If you had listened carefully, and if you do meditate carefully, you will realize that already you know the Father and have seen Him. Now Philip joins the questioners. And in verse 8 says to him, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough." What he says by his request is, "I haven't seen Him." Thomas said, "I don't know the way." Philip said, "And I haven't seen God." And the Lord has said, "You do know the way, and you have seen the Father." Now, obviously, somebody is mistaken here. Or perhaps both are right, as I believe them to be. They had within their grasp the vision of God. They had within their grasp the knowledge of the way. But they simply were not seeing, and they simply were not understanding what was right before them. Jesus is disappointed in Philip's request. And he says, "Have I been all this time with you, and you do not know me?" That would hurt. it would hurt someone who loved Jesus because you wouldn't like him to think that all this time that you've spent with him has been wasted in his mind. Philip was one of the early disciples. First chapter of John. Remember what he did when he had his first interview with Jesus? He went and found his friend Nathanael and he said, "Come and see, we found the one who's the Christ. Jesus of Nazareth. Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Nathanael responded, and Philip said, "Come and see for yourself." Now, he wasn't uncertain about what he had seen in Jesus of Nazareth. He was confident that this is the Christ, and he was announcing it to others. But now he doesn't come and see. He's wanting something more. And I want to say that it's my conviction that what he's wanting is some sort of physical, palpable, easily discernible vision of God, like the children of Israel had at Mount Sinai, or like Moses had when he went up into the mountain. That's what he wanted. And he wasn't seeing that. All he saw was Jesus. And he was still that humble carpenter of Galilee. And there had been a lot of miracles, but still opposition. And that opposition was hanging over like a storm cloud. And the next day it was going to break. And, you know, it's a little hard to think about Jesus as the way and the truth and the life when nothing is happening. You know, some of us have been Christians for a long time. And we've had opportunity, like Thomas and Philip and later Judas, not Iscariot, will raise his voice. And, of course, Peter has already spoken. And perhaps the Lord will have to say to us, have we been together all this time and you still don't know me? And perhaps we'll respond, but we know who you are and we believe. We believe that you're the Christ. And we believe that you have the answers to all our questions. And we believe you have within yourself the fulfillment of all our needs. And he will say, but you don't understand it. Which is what he meant by this question that he asked of Philip. Have you been such a long time with me and still you do not know me? You know, this word know can mean a lot of things in the English language, and it can mean a lot of things in the Greek language. Know is a great deal more than just recognition in many usages. John 17:3 in the same gospel, this is life eternal, that they should know you, the only true God, and him whom you have sent. That's not just knowing that he exists. Matthew 7:23 perhaps gets at it when Jesus, in a strong rebuke, as he anticipates what people are going to say when the judgment comes, he said, "I'm going to have to say to some people, depart from me, you that work iniquity, I never knew you." Which is to say, we were never a part of each other. You never really knew nor understood what I was about. And I certainly don't see the life you led as being anything that strikes a harmonious note with me. To know can mean just awareness. And it can mean complete awareness. And then it can mean a complete awareness that moves one to be able to apply what he's understood. Robert Turner told about a fellow in a geometry class who was an A student who climbed a pole with a string to figure out how long the guy wire needed to be. Well, he could pass the test, but he didn't know much about geometry when it came to application, because if he'd known anything about geometry, he'd have gotten down there and measured the distance between the pole and where he was going to put his guy wire, and then he would have known how tall the pole was, and he would have taken that old rule that the square of the two sides of the triangle equal to the square of the hypotenuse, which is the length of the guy wire, and he'd have had it. But, you see, he's just good in the classroom. And some of us, you know, have been good. These, Judas and Thomas and Philip, they'd been good in the classroom, they'd been listening, but they hadn't been able to make application. Still running at a sort of a carnal level. The way, the way, the way. Where's the road? We need the road. Now see God, where do we see Him? We haven't seen Him. And Jesus said, if you have seen Me, you have seen the Father. If you have known Me, you have known the way. I am the way. In other words, what He says to them and He says to us is, if you will follow Me, if you will understand My character, if you will understand My will, if you will understand My nature, you will not only know the way to God, but something else will be true. You will have seen God Himself. We're all waiting, some of us, for something spectacular. I think some people are waiting for that to happen so they can become Christians. For the heaven to sort of explode and the lights to start flashing. Well, it's not going to happen. And it doesn't need to happen because God is before you in Jesus Christ. We think about God in the display of enormous power. And certainly He has that. But that is not the most salient feature of God. The most salient feature of God is His gracious love and purity. And Jesus was all that. And they could look at Him and see just exactly how God felt about things. Because that's how Jesus felt about things. He was the Son of God. And they could look at Him and listen to Him and find out just how God wanted life to be among men, because that was the will of God. And in that they saw Him. Well, we wonder about ourselves. After spending time with Jesus, how disappointed He must be with us in certain areas. And I tell you, the reason He's disappointed is because He cares. If He didn't care, He wouldn't be disappointed. He wouldn't have expectation. He wouldn't have made the investment that He's made in each one of us. I know He's not down on this earth walking with us as He did in those days, but He's at the right hand of the Father, and if you want to know if He responds to what's happening down here, then remember the case of Stephen. When they were beating the life out of him, that he saw Jesus standing at the right hand of God, which indicates his deep concern for that. Remember what he said to Saul. Why do you persecute me? And he was talking about the persecution that Saul had unleashed against his people. He cares about what happens to his people. And not just in the sense of the unjust treatment they receive. And if you think that the God has turned his back when you're suffering, you're mistaken. God knows about that. And he knows particularly about that in his Son, Jesus Christ, because he's been here. And you can never say that God doesn't understand about the suffering you're doing. But I want to turn that in another direction tonight. You must understand that when He cares so much and when He's invested so much and He sees us after much investment and after much time make these kindergarten mistakes and make them again and again, not just make them again and again, but for those kindergarten misapprehensions to be a part of our lives. He understands about mistakes, sins. We'll call it what it is, Kevin. He understands about transgressions of the law of God that are a result of weakness and inadvertence, and we repent of the inadvertence because it's our fault we weren't paying close enough attention. But sometimes it's a part of us, a habitual way of doing things. I wonder how Jesus feels. What do you think when we don't study His Word? I mean, seriously. Some of us who come to Bible classes here never open the Bible, never respond. If you ask a question, it's sort of a blank stare comes over the face. Bible hasn't been opened from Sunday to Wednesday, and Wednesday to Sunday, and then it's hardly opened at that time. I wonder what one who said, man does not live by bread alone, quoting Moses, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. I wonder how he feels about that. I wonder how one who was so filled up with his Father's will that it came rolling out anytime anyone spoke to him or talked about him. And at 12 years of age, was in the temple talking about the word of his Father. And ever afterward, I am confident that that was his passion. He was his Father's son. How do we learn about God? How do we give expression to our interest in Him? By seeking to know His will. It is written in the prophets, Jesus said, they shall all be taught of God. For everyone that is taught or learns from the Father, heard from the Father, has learned, comes to me. That's the process. And I marvel at the lack of serious study sometimes that goes on. And He looks at us and we haven't mastered yet some of the elementary things. And we don't seem to care. We say to others, well, I'm just not good at this. You would if you cared. You'd be good at it. As best as you could. There'd be study. There'd be diligent searching. Look, this is Jesus you're talking to. He's the one that's made the investment. And after all this time, nothing. I wonder how he feels about those of us who make it pretty clear that we don't enjoy worship occasions. And we show that by not coming. He thrilled to worship. Luke 4:16 says he went to the synagogue in Nazareth as was his custom. And they handed him the book to read, which also must have been his custom. Not just at the beginning of his public ministry, but I suspect that throughout this period of time, he was in the synagogue with the rest of the men of the city of Nazareth as he grew up there. And he read, and he was one who loved to spend time in worship. He's the one who said that the Father seeks people to worship Him in spirit and in truth, which means with the intensity of the total personality and according to God's will in absolute submission. How will we explain? He will be disappointed in us when we come here and if we come here sleep through the whole thing. I mean, well, I'm tired. I mean, I've worked hard and I've played hard and I've done a lot of things hard, and I get here and when I sit down, I go, I'm tired. And we have some, of course, that if you're here on Sunday night, well, that I'm not preaching to you, am I? I mean, once a week's enough. Twice a week is far and away good, you know, and I'll get here if I can. You have to understand that this son loved to be in the presence of his Father. And he'll have a difficult time understanding us when we just are not turned on by that. And some of us are not turned on by it because we find other things to do often that are not that compelling. I wonder how he feels when he sees us taking our vacations and trying to get the least involvement with the brethren we can get and still say we've done it, so nobody will ask us where we went to church and we can't tell them. But we hit somewhere on Sunday morning if it's convenient. If we can't hit it on Sunday morning, we'll hit it Sunday night. But once is enough. And if we don't hit it either time because our vacation arrangement is such that we've got to be sure and get that in, because if we're on vacation and the purpose of a vacation is to get out and relax and enjoy yourself, and that's the thing we're going to do, and if we can work in an assembly of worship with some Christians somewhere, well, we'll do that. Can we say we know Him when that's our disposition? I think had he gone somewhere else to get away, he would have sought out that opportunity and sought out the opportunity to be with some other Christians. Perhaps to be strengthened indeed himself and as well to encourage somebody else. Some little struggling group. He loved to pray. He did it often. Came out of the water in the Jordan, prayed. Ended his life on the night before he was crucified, earnestly petitioning God. And all between time in the mountains, all away, sometimes all night long, praying to God. So much so that the disciples in the 11th chapter of Luke said, "Teach us how to pray." And they weren't just talking about words. Talking about attitude, disposition, the very idea of trusting in God and finding oneself constantly in the presence of Him. But I wonder how he feels. And we don't enjoy it. We find it burdensome. We just don't do it. I wonder how he feels when we let our hurt feelings cause us to withdraw from other Christians and sometimes even stay home because we're upset. You know, this is the one who prayed for his murderers and asked God to forgive them. Do we know him when we let little offenses that other people, or big ones for that matter, cause us, rather than to turn toward them in concern for their souls as well and for the reconciliation of this relationship, which is important to God and should be important to us, let that diminish our spiritual commitment and hold some deep grudge in our hearts? How can we say we've seen the Father? How can we say we know the Son when we behave in that way? I wonder if we can say that we know Him when we don't want to suffer any inconvenience in serving God. I mean, we're perfectly willing to do it when it is convenient. But inconvenience, I mean, doing it in difficult circumstances. We wouldn't even inconvenience ourselves if some of the family comes to visit us. And we wouldn't want to offend them because they don't go. And if we should leave and go and leave them there, that would be an offense, and we don't want to offend them. Offend God by all means. Disappoint the Son of God who emptied himself for our sake, by all means, but don't disappoint people. Have we seen him? Do we know him? Do we understand him? I wonder if we have seen him and we know him when we plan our lives so as not to be around Christians very much. We do make contact here at the building occasionally. But so far as any further contact with other Christians, we don't have any. We indeed choose the company of others instead. Jesus said, when he was told in Matthew 12, toward the end of the chapter, that his mother and his brethren were outside looking for him, he said, "No, here is my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Everyone that does the will of my Father." He felt such a kinship with people who love God. Those were the people he longed to be with, that it, even physical kinship didn't make any difference. In fact, he's told us, has he not, that everyone that comes to follow him must hate his mother and his father and his brother and sister, wife, children, and his own life also, if he wants to be my disciple. And we just don't care about Christians. Why is that? Have we seen him? Do we know him? Have we understood at all what he's about? When he says to us in John 15:13 and following that, "I'm telling you, I'm giving you a new commandment to love one another as I have loved you." And then he adds, "Hereby shall men know that you are my disciples because you love one another." And what is the evidence of this love? Well, somebody says, I wouldn't do them any harm for the world. Yes, I know, but you don't want to be with them. You don't seek their company in your home. You don't seek their company in their home. There is no tie here. Can we imagine Jesus having that attitude, going home after every synagogue service and saying, "I don't have time for the rest of you. I've got other things to do"? Can you imagine telling the disciples, "Well, I'd like to be with you today, but I'm tired. I can't do this all the time." I've invested enough in you fellas. They were together continually. He was with them with a whole heart. We would be offended if somehow Jesus, the Son of God, didn't have time for us. But he was a social man. And that leads me to speak to you about the question of how he must feel about us and how we must feel about ourselves when we don't want to be with people to talk to them about their souls. We don't want to be troubled with them. We don't want to get our lives entangled with their lives. We don't want to have the inconvenience of that. And Jesus is the one who wept over Jerusalem. Wept convulsively, says Luke 19:41. He's the one also that said in Matthew 23, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, that killest the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto her. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and you would not. That was grief on his part. How does he feel about us when we feel no grief about people that are lost? Do we know him? Have we seen him? I wonder how he feels when we're ashamed of him, really. Because we don't want to speak about him in certain circumstances and quarters. We don't want to bring up the subject. If somebody else brings up the subject, we will enter into it. But we don't want to bring up the subject. He said, if you're ashamed of me in the midst of this generation, then I'll be ashamed of you. Have we seen him? Do we know him? How about when we're so concerned about ourselves and what we have in this life? How about when we are pushing to obtain things? Pushing so hard that we'll spend every credit card we've got to the max if nobody challenges us. And we buy the house. What house do we buy? Well, let's just figure out how much we can absolutely barely pay for. That's the one we want. Find a house that we can just barely pay for, and that's the one we want. So when we have paid for the house, we don't have anything left, but we paid for it. I wonder how he feels around us when we have that attitude. Who said he didn't have a place to lay his head? Wasn't concerning him any. But by his apostle, he did tell us in the 4th chapter of Ephesians that we ought to steal no more, but labor with our hands a thing that is good, that we might have something to give to those that have need. Mindless. Acquisitiveness. Trying to have more, buy more, buy. It almost gets to be our therapy. Well, that's what one wild Pentecostal preacher's wife said. It was cheaper than a psychiatrist. We don't want to imitate that. How carnal. Buy, 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 spend, spend, spend. I know that's what free enterprise economics is about. I know that's what greases the machine. But now listen, we're not the ones who've been called into this world to support free enterprise by spending everything we've got. We are the ones that Jesus has called to think about what's important here. And when we let our jobs so consume us that we have no energy left for anything else, no energy left for our families that are fundamental, and no energy left for people that need us to encourage and to strengthen and to stand by and help, no energy for anything because we've exhausted all that in our chosen profession. That's too much profession. And when Jesus looks at us, and we look at him, what are we going to say? Have I been so long time with you, he may ask, and you do not know me? All this time. And still the same old kindergarten errors. Well, what are we going to say when we're so hard on people that sin? What do you think the Lord feels about that? And we just take somebody as a target for tonight. We're not giving them any leeway at all. And we can be hard sometimes on people. He's the one that went in the house of Simon the Pharisee in the 7th chapter of Luke, had this woman come in, this reputable woman, falling down at his feet, weeping over him, anointing him with precious ointment. And he wasn't a bit embarrassed about that. He just told Simon later on, she loves much because she's been forgiven much, and she knows she needs it. Now, if we're embarrassed by people like that, if we can't spend any time among the publicans and sinners, then I don't know if he'll understand that. Because he said the whole need a physician, or the sick need a physician and not those that are whole. He's also the one that said to the woman taken the very act of adultery, go and sin no more, but I will not condemn you. Condemnation in this case is eternal judgment. Because that's what her enemies, that's what her detractors wanted to do. They wanted her judged. Jesus wanted her saved. Have I been so long time with you, he might ask, and you do not know me? We could ask a lot of questions like that. Knowing the Lord means awareness, yes. Knowing the Lord means deep awareness, yes. Knowing the Lord means deep awareness plus application. Knowing the Lord means deep awareness plus application plus the total control of our lives by the way He thinks and the way He feels and what He wants, so that we say with Him, not my will, but yours be done. 1 John 2:3 and 4 says that if we know Him, we will keep His commandments. And he that says he knows him and does not keep his commandments is a liar. I believe it grieves him. I believe I have grieved him many times. I've grieved myself, but not as many times I've grieved him, because I haven't had sense enough to recognize how many times I've grieved him. I've recognized some. But when Ephesians 4 verse 30 says, grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, then I don't have any question in my mind that the whole of the Godhead is grieved by our transgressions and by our indifference to things that are absolutely at the heart of God. And He must be disappointed to look at us and see all this time. If you were a school teacher, and you had this student, and you had this student year after year after year, and you finally come down to the end of things, and they just fail one part of the examination after another, what would you feel? We're not just submitting to some code. It's not knowing the will of God that's important here, but knowing that that's the way we know Him. We know Him by knowing His will. And it's not a matter of disobeying the commandment, but it's a matter of betraying the one who loves us. So, you can sort of listen in on this tonight. I'll take my share of reproof, because I need it. I don't think the Lord is happy with a man like myself who's been a Christian for, well, it's almost 50 years. And making dumb mistakes, not just dumb mistakes, but following a pattern that is just unworthy of somebody who's been a Christian this long, or failing to do some things and have a right attitude toward those things. And I don't want him to be disappointed in me. I don't want to disappoint. I don't want him looking at me and saying, Earnhardt, after all these years, don't you understand anything yet? Haven't you got the message? Don't you see what's important? Don't you see and understand how you need to behave yourself? And I want to say, as I conclude this lesson tonight, he may be looking at you, dear friend. Here you are, not a Christian. Had all kinds of opportunity to know. In a metaphor, he's preached in your streets and you've heard his voice. And you've been around people that know him, and you've been around people who know him and behave well, whose lives reflect the glory of the Christ, because they've loved you. And loved you unselfishly. And loved you like you are. Wanted you to be better, but didn't reject you and turn their back on you, because they cared. And all this time, as Kevin said in his prayer, you've seen the goodness of God all around you.
But it hadn't made any difference yet. You think he wouldn't care about one sinner out there like me? I wouldn't be, you know, he'll be all right. He will care, trust me. He is not willing that any should perish. It's time. It's time to act upon those lessons that we've had in our grasp, as he said to these disciples of his, and we just haven't quite applied them yet. You know what's right. And you know the way. And you've seen the Father in the gospel of Christ. Why don't you respond to that? While we encourage you with this invitation hymn.